Welcome, Hoosier Nation, to our 147th episode of the Hoosier Sound, where we are the official podcast of Indiana HQ. Our mission and goal is simple. We want to bring in-depth analysis and coverage for Indiana University sports to as many fans as possible across a multitude of modern platforms. We are recording this edition of the Hoosier Sound on June 23rd, 2020. Summer's underway, where I am your host, Nathan Christian, and here with me tonight is Hoosier Sound veteran and part-time Arsenal fan and possible baseball solution maker, Matt Lucas. Matt, look, forget Arsenal. You could probably get baseball going, right? I mean, come on. What's going on? Why isn't baseball started yet? If you want to answer that, you can. How's life in general?
Life's great. I wish we had baseball. I wish I had something to distract me from the train wreck that is Arsenal Football Club. For those that aren't clued in, Arsenal is a team that plays in the English Premier League, and they're having quite a terrible last couple weeks. Anyways, for as far as baseball goes, I'm not an agent, nor am I an owner, so I have no idea how groups of rich people are going to figure out how to make each other happy. But, you know, I hope they do come to their senses and eventually get the season underway.
Yeah, totally agreed on that. Yeah, we got fun stuff to get into tonight, Matt. Look, about 6 weeks ago, we had a podcast episode 141 of the Hoosier Sound, where we walked our listeners through some of the changes we would make to college basketball and even the IU basketball program. And that was one of the more off the rails episodes, if you ask me. You know, we talked about mascots and changing the arena. It was pretty crazy, but tonight, we're going to talk about the changes that we would make to college football and how we would fix both college football in general, as well as our recommendations for the IU football program. You know, are we thinking of maybe changing the coach? Would we add a few games to the schedule? Would we change the non-conference portion? I don't know. We'll see what we get into as far as the IU portion goes. But first off, Matt, let's talk about college football in general. The sport itself. Some might say it's the second most popular sport in the United States after professional football. Although you could probably lump all that into one. A lot of concerns right now about COVID-19 even allowing the season to begin. We're not going to get into that here. Let's start with maybe some rule changes that you're thinking about, Matt. Is there anything that bothers you, that kind of annoys you as you sit down and watch college football from morning until night on fall Saturdays?
Yeah, sure. There's a couple things that really, you know, irk me. I think one of them is the lack of consistency when it comes to scheduling and scheduling non-conference opponents. Look, everybody knows you play in the SEC, you play in the Big Ten, you play in the Pac-12, you're going to get some really good teams to play. But I really hate it when we get to the end of the season and they're like, well, Alabama played their 8 conference SEC games and then they played 4 teams out of the SWAC. Right. And you're like, why did they play New Mexico State and Fresno State? And you get what I'm saying. New Mexico or Fresno State isn't in the SWAC, but you know, they play somewhat mediocre football programs. And it's like other teams like Ohio State will go out of their way to play like an Oklahoma in the non-conference. And it's like, or Alabama's like marquee non-conference game will be in Atlanta against Duke. Like, come on. Like, one, Duke isn't a good, this isn't basketball. Two, like, that's basically a home game. You've moved to Atlanta, which is like 3 hours away from the border in Alabama. So it's like, that's not fair. So I would like to see conferences strike up deals with each other. I think that's something that I'd like to do. So something like the Pac-12 for the next 5 years will have a Pac-12 SEC tournament, basically, where every Pac-12 team will play one SEC team a year. And then they have a total at the end of the 4 years and the winning conference gets like a trophy or something. I don't know. They get to brag about it, but I think that would be fun and force conferences to kind of play matchups that maybe you've never played before. Right. So if it's a Big Ten ACC matchup, you know, IU gets to play like we played Virginia before, which is actually a pretty good matchup for us. We might be able to play somebody like a Miami or a Florida State once out of those 4 years, which is a really big non-conference matchup that IU normally wouldn't get. Due to its lack of football success. So that's something I'd like to see. Obviously, there's a couple ones that we're going to list off, but like that's one of the ones that I can think of off the top of my head.
That the one matchup you talked about was like a Pac-12 SEC challenge. You know, one of the more fun non-conference games last year was Auburn taking on Oregon.
Oregon. That's exactly why it came into my head, because I remember sitting there and watching it and going, this is great. Like week one of college football season, we have like a down to a wire power five, two teams that hardly ever play each other game. Like, this is great. This is what college football is supposed to be. That's what you get about the best part about non-conference season in college basketball is all the little tournaments. Because then you get to see some matchups between two college basketballs, you know, powerhouses like a Gonzaga and a Michigan, or an Oregon and I don't know, off the top of my head, like a Duke, right? Like you don't get to see those very often. They're from opposite coasts. They don't play a lot of the same competition. So it's actually kind of good to see them and compare them. And it makes it at the end of the season when you're evaluating opponents, it makes it easier to evaluate across conferences, because you can go, okay, this team from this conference, say Arizona State, beat a Texas A&M in football, and Texas A&M is ranked higher than Arizona State, but Arizona State has a better record. So like, how does that correlate when it comes down to the, you know, bowl seeding or whatever? So,
yeah, well, and I'm just looking, if you based a potential 2020 Pac-12 SEC challenge off of last year's standings, I mean, talk about these matchups, just kind of, you know, roughly estimating these, like Oregon versus Georgia, right? How fun would that be? Or or Utah against Florida. I think there would, that's the Urban Meyer Bowl, if they would have that one. You know, how about a matchup like USC against LSU, something like that? I do know USC Alabama was on the slate for this upcoming fall. So, you know, it looks like there's like one matchup every year. It would be interesting, now that you mention it, like what we'd normally get in college basketball for some of these prime non-conference tournaments is a committee somewhere selecting the matchups. They make the matchups for you. We don't have that in college football. Is that something you'd like to see?
Yes, I would like to see that taken out of the coach's hands, really, for non-conference, just schedules in general. Like, they don't get to schedule their conference games. They shouldn't be able to schedule their non-conference games. Like, it doesn't really make any sense for me. They only have four non-conference games. Just make sure that those four are planned ahead of schedule, and you know, it's out of the coach's hands. I do see it as kind of like a recruiting tool, where you can be like, hey, we're in these tournaments playing against the, like this conference, like we can get a good seed if we're good, instead of, oh, well, we plan to play Oregon in 2027. Your younger brother, who is 13, will be able to play against him. So it's kind of like it takes it out of the hand and brings the scheduling back to a more even place for schools that aren't exactly great at football in the moment.
Yeah, it's really funny. I think I just saw the other day Alabama and Ohio State had scheduled a home and home, and they weren't even ready to give dates for it yet. I don't think this has been confirmed. It's just at a future date to be determined, and it's probably going to end up being in like 2048 for all
it was 2027 and 2028, I believe. And that's why I said 2027, 2028, because I remember reading the article about it, but they're like, we don't know what like time of the year it'll be, but 2027 and 2028. I'm like, we're scheduling stuff that's 7 years ahead of time. Like, I know that's how college football non-conference schedules work, but like that just furthers my point. There should be, you know, a committee just saying, okay, this conference is playing this conference and this conference and this conference and this conference one game of the year. The best four teams will play the best four teams and vice versa.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, talking about another topic off the field, probably the most hot button issue in college football. How would you handle the playoff right now? Okay. Right now it's four teams and it's been that way for a few years. Would you keep it at four? Would you shrink it to two like it used to be a long time ago? Would you expand it to six, eight, more than that? I mean, what are your thoughts on the playoff as it is?
I like the four-team playoff. I think the two games is good. However, I would like to add one more game to the playoff, and that be a playoff for the fourth seed. So between four and five. Because there's usually a solid top five in college football. When you go back down through the rankings, four There's usually a top four. Some years there's a solid top four. Some years there's a fifth that could get into the top four. I know this last year, we had Oklahoma and Baylor who played each other in the last game for the Big 12 championship. But there's people still saying like, oh, you know, you could see like an Alabama slip in there, fourth or fifth. I would like to see a playoff game for the fourth spot. That team plays an extra game. And therefore, the number one seed gets not only a bye, but they get a team that's played one extra game in the meantime. Therefore, if you work your butt off to get the number one seed in college football playoff, you get a little bit more of an advantage in that one game. I think that makes more sense. And it gives another team an opportunity to play in postseason play for a meaningful bowl game. And then maybe even two extra games for a national championship. Like that to me makes a lot more sense.
You know, and I think there are a lot of people who share your viewpoint there. I think having a matchup to determine that fourth team, a matchup or even a couple games determining that fourth team would be really fun. Yeah. In general, I want to expand the college football playoff. In fact, I think I even put it in my Twitter bio. I'm that excited about it. I think, you know, whatever it is, if you want to make it 6, 8, 12, whatever, I'm not a logistics expert. So I don't know how all this works exactly as far as, you know, the student schedules and, you know, whether you're playing it on campus sites or a neutral site and all that other stuff, including incorporating the other bowl games.
Right.
But give me more win or go home postseason games. I think I love it. I mean, there was so much hesitation to expand it from 2 to 4. And yeah. Now we're like, they should have done this a long time ago. I mean, a 4-team college football playoff. I know you occasionally get some blowouts, but every year you get a 4-team tournament, you get a clear-cut national champ, and almost all college football fans are happy unless you root for one of the losers. Give me a bigger playoff. I mean, last year I'm looking at the top 25. You know, if a team like Oregon got in, we could have seen Justin Herbert play in a tournament type setting. If you know, maybe a team like Oklahoma. I know they lost to LSU in the semifinals, so you know. I apologize for that, but Alabama is what I meant to say. I think you talked about them as well. You know, it would have been fun to see guys like Jerry Jeudy and his incredible wide receiver teammates get another shot.
Oh my God, yeah. Ruggs and, you know, Jeudy and, oh man.
Yeah, Ruggs and Jeudy, exactly. And, you know, the rest of the crew, they must have felt Waddle. Like they had about 22 draft picks. Yes. You know, so yeah, just give me more playoff. And we shouldn't have to be really pulling teeth over this type of thing.
What are your thoughts about a non-Power 5 team making in the playoff? Because that was something that I considered for a while because I'm from Florida. I'm about 2 hours away from Orlando, UCF. You know, they're kings of that. I remember growing up watching the Boise States of the world shock teams in the Fiesta Bowl. Kellen Moore go 11-1 every year and somehow lose to Nevada or Utah State or something like that at the end of the year and crush their hopes and dreams of making the BCS National Championship game. So those teams would have made it. The 11-1 Boise State teams would have made it if it was a 4-team playoff. But would they have actually been selected because they're one of the four best teams? I'm not sure. That's why I had an alternate version of the 5-team playoff where the fourth team is penalized by having to play the best power, non-power
group,
five
group
team.
Of five,
group
yeah,
five, a group of five, yeah. The best group of five team outside of that for a play-in game. And if some years it'll be easier because, you know, like this past year, I believe it was Memphis that was the best group of five team, but then other years you'll get matched up against like a UCF or a Boise State that is an actual juggernaut at that level. So
I would love to give them a shot. I think they, especially if a team goes undefeated, like a UCF or a Memphis or a Boise State, you name it.
Or a one Utah, of those teams, your throwback. Yeah.
If one of those teams legitimately runs the table and don't come at me with, oh, they play easy schedules, because even if you play an easy schedule, where you're supposed to win, probably where you have like a 70% chance of winning each game, it's really hard to actually go undefeated. It's why last year there was no group of five team that went undefeated. Yep. Because, you know, if you do it for 12 Saturdays, more likely than not, someone's going to trip you up. So if you go undefeated, you know, it's worth taking a shot. And look, a lot of people might say, well, they might get blown out. Right, a team like Memphis might get blown out by Alabama. Well, Clemson, or I should say Ohio State's gotten blown up by Clemson before, and Oklahoma's gotten blown up by LSU like it happened the last college football playoff. So blowouts happen. Why not at least make it interesting and give a group of five team a shot to play one of the powerhouses? I totally agree. You know, we could do it the way you mentioned, or, you know, if you have something like an 8-team playoff, one of the spots can be reserved for a group of five teams. So yeah, I really love the idea. It's too unfortunate that UCF team from a few years ago didn't get a shot, because they went on to the bowl game and knocked off Auburn. And
who beat Alabama that year.
Yeah, Auburn, exactly.
Yeah. So that's crazy. But yeah, like, and another thing, I argue this with my friends all the time, because we love to talk college football. A lot of them went to Florida State and Florida, who actually have very good college football. I used starting to have good college football, but they, you know, we grow up around here. You're either a Seminoles, a Gator, or a Hurricane fan. So you grow up loving college football down here. And they were just telling me, like, I can't see UCF ever making a playoff. I'm like, you know, the American Conference is very good, right? Like, UCF, good football school now. Cincinnati has always been a good football school. I remember going and watching them in the Orange Bowl a couple years back. Houston, Memphis, Temple, like SMU is getting better now. Yeah. Like, these are some really good football teams, some of which would compete and be decent in Power 5 conferences. So it's not like they're going out there and playing eight cupcakes in their schedule. They're not. There's teams like the Mountain West, who's always decent. Boise State, Nevada, Fresno State, San Jose State sometimes. Like, those teams are good, and you can find good Power 5 teams. I mean, look, Mike Borg came from Fresno State, turned our football program around. There's plenty of good coaches and talent to be found at the Group of Five conference level. So I'm really excited to see if they're going to include them in the discussions, because everybody loves an underdog yeah. story. And it's so much fun to root for a school like that, because then you don't have any like rivals or past, you know, hate to them, right? Like, nobody is ever going to root against App State unless you're a Michigan fan. And it's just fun to root for App State, because you don't have any prior, you know, bad experiences with them, unless you're a Michigan fan. So.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, not only are, you know, would the group of five team that gets a berth in the college football playoff be a good team, you also do get the rare opportunity to see potentially some quality NFL prospects going up against some of these big schools, right? I mean, I know Utah State had a tough year last year, but it would have been fun to see Jordan Love take on Alabama's defense or Oklahoma's defense, even though I think Utah State got smacked by LSU in the non-conference last year. So it's not the best example, but you get my point. Getting the chance to see one of those group of five players in a big time non-conference postseason matchup would be really fun. But
yeah, like somebody like Ed Oliver from Houston as well.
Yep. Houston, yeah. So. Exactly. So no doubt about it. So let's transition from off the field changes. And we talked about adding a group of five team into the college football playoff. We talked about expanding the college football playoff at least a little bit.
Right.
We talked about some scheduling changes, but on the field, what sort of things would you like to see? I'll start with this. I am sick and tired of these weird differences between college football and the NFL. I understand the competition's different and stuff like that, but to me, it's really dumb. And our normal podcast co-host Noah brought this up in our chat earlier this week. He said it's really silly how in college football, 1 foot inbounds is a completed pass, but in the NFL, it's 2 feet. For me, the dumb thing is in the NFL, the 2-point conversions are from the 2-yard line. In college football, it's from the 3. I mean, what? Are you kidding me? Like, why is it so like strangely different? I don't know. Those are a couple things that popped into my head. As far as the rules of the game or stuff on the field, what kind of things would you like to change? I know there's one thing that bugs you, and that's the challenge and review system that goes on in college football.
I don't like how there's an arbitrary review system. It's like, the refs will do it. It's like, when did we ever trust the refs to be right in the first place? Now we're trusting them to make themselves wrong.
The funniest thing is when, I don't know if it changed recently, but it used to be that the ref would walk over and like look at this like really tiny TV Like it's like 8-inch by 12-inch TV.
It's like this big, yeah.
And even in the NFL, they go into the tunnel and it's like they're watching this like portable TV replay after replay. And I'm like,
yeah,
you don't want to just send this to the guys in a nice comfy living room or headquarters somewhere with big 80-inch plasmas, I should say. Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah, exactly. It's like I have a better TV I'm watching right. on at home. I have a better view of it. The ref is the one making the call. Like, how does this work? Like, I definitely have a better screen resolution than he does. So, that's just blasphemy to me. Like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, look, refs, like, when do we ever trust the refs to do anything? I know I just brought up the Premier League earlier. They just brought in VAR. When do we trust the refs to go, let's go check if I was wrong? Like, never. They're like players. They don't want to be wrong. They don't want to think they made a wrong mistake. They're human. Like, that's just what we are. We're proud people. So I would like to see that a coach's challenge involved, just because there's got to be a check for the refs. The same thing to bring the NFL pass interference challenge rule over to college. I just would like to see the ability to challenge a play, because there's so many times in college football, and I know IU specifically, where you look at a play and go, that was clear pass interference that the ref missed. I don't know how many times it's happened when I've been watching us play Ohio State, but it clearly happens every time we play Ohio State. Now, Ohio State gets the benefit of the doubt on the call. I am tired of it, so for that, I want that brought over from the NFL to college football so we can save my sanity every time we play Ohio State.
The funny thing is, I think the NFL actually talked about removing that, after
I know they did that
season. So it's funny you mention it, but I actually agree. I think if you can make it reviewable, if you can do it, make it reviewable. Like just allow, allow things like pass interferences to be challenged. Remember how long it took them for making the targeting calls reviewable. You know, now you can do that, which is a great move. Let me ask you this, Matt. For your challenges, then, I know right now, technically in the Big Ten, you could have one challenge per game if the referee doesn't review it, but you almost never see that happen. How right. many challenges would you give coaches? And you know, would it be the same as in the NFL where it's you know, you get two challenges, and if you get both right, you get a third? Because I honestly think that's kind of messed up as it is.
No, one per half. You get two challenges, but you get one challenge per half. So you get one in the first half, one in the second half. If you get it right, you get it right. Get it wrong, get it wrong. But you got to keep that challenge in your pocket until you absolutely need it in the first half. So I'm sure there'll be some coaches that will challenge something stupid at the end of the first half, but whatever. They have to use the challenge anyway. And then in the second half, they're going to pocket it until like the last 2 minutes. So it's going to be the smart coaches are going to take what their assistant coaches up in the booth tell them to take, and the dumb coaches are not going to listen to their assistant coaches and going to hold on to it and maybe waste a challenge. So
that's interesting. I haven't thought of it that way. You get one per half. I don't hate it. I don't hate it, to be honest with you. I'm going to throw something out of left field at you here. Okay.
Yep.
So in the NFL, if you lose a challenge, you lose a timeout, right? I think in college football, if we're going to change the sort of the challenge review system, I think if you lose your challenge, the other team can get the choice whether to make you lose your timeout or push you back 10 yards. I think that's the kind of consequence that would make college football a little bit more interesting. So, you know, if it's third and 10, maybe let's change the game a little bit. If it's third and 5, okay, and you challenge a pass that you thought was complete, but the refs called it incomplete and it ends up being incomplete, now the other team has the option to say, hey, you either lose your timeout or we're going to push you back and make it 4th and 15 instead of 4th and 5. That's the type of thing I'm getting at. I think it would be a really fun change to college football, but looking at your face, you're either confused or you're upset.
I don't know. I'm not sold on it. I could see a 5-yard penalty. I think 10 yards harsh. Like, that is an extremely harsh punishment. And while that is fun, I think, like, there's a lot of times where somebody challenges something because it's a 2nd and 10 and it's in a crucial situation late in the game, and they challenge it because the player comes over and pleads that he was almost right. And he was right. He caught the ball, but it slid on the grass right before it got to him. Like, is it really going to be challenged, like punishing those teams that do that? at the end and make that second and 10 become a second and or a third and 20.
Yeah, like, that's right. That's what I'm saying.
You know, five yards is, for me, is fine, where it goes from a second and 15 to a third
make
and
it 15. 10, Matt. Push him back, Matt. Make him pay. The challenges that bug me the most are the ones that are like third and goal from the 1 yard line, right? And the guy, like the running back, plows himself into the huddle of offensive and defensive linemen. And there's no way that you can tell the ball crosses the goal line, but you spend 10 minutes looking at it because it's so close. And then the team loses a timeout that doesn't even matter in the first half. If you waste your time on a challenge like that, you should be pushed back to the 11 yard line. That's what I want to see.
I don't mind that challenge, but what I do mind after that is because one, we get a whole commercial break during the timeout for the challenge. And then after they review it and then they either kick the field goal or they get the touchdown, then we get another commercial break. There should be no commercial break after the field goal or timeout. They should be a number of commercial breaks allotted for the game. If they get extra because they have a couple extra timeouts, that's fine. But if somebody uses a timeout, let's say it's for the, under four timeout or whatever it is that the media will take in the quarter, that, or in the half, that timeout then will become the under four timeout. So it's like kind of how they do it in basketball. Yeah. So if somebody takes a timeout at like the, it's the under four timeout, they take a timeout at 350. That is the 350 media timeout.
Yep.
So they should do that in football anyways. And then just after the field goal or extra point is made, they just go straight into the kickoff. So it takes off another 5 minutes from waiting around in the game.
Yeah, the only media timeouts I'm aware of as far as college football is concerned are the ones that happen sort of just before or just after kickoffs and punts and things like that.
Yes.
So unlike college basketball where they have it, you know, divided up in 4 minute segments, in college football, sometimes you'll see them go to a commercial right after a punt. Other times they'll keep
it
going.
That's just so dumb for me.
And if there's a huge commercial break and then you have a challenge and another long commercial break, it does really, you know, put kind of a buzzkill out there for the fan.
Yeah, no. So less commercial breaks.
Man, I love it.
Like, look, I like the money in college football. I get it. Advertising is awesome, but they're not paying for an extra seven timeouts. They're paying for the advanced allotted what the average timeout or media break is. Don't give them the seven extra, okay? I don't want it. Nobody wants it. It makes the game like 45 minutes longer than it needs to be.
I love it. Sleep on the 10-yard challenge penalty. I think you'll wake up to it.
It might grow on me.
But. Yeah, exactly. Let's take a little break here and talk about who won the week, Matt. And you know, IU got some great news earlier today, and we reported it over on the Indiana HQ Twitter account, which I would highly recommend all of you go follow because we break news on there. We've got articles on there. You click around on our website, indianahq.com. You'll see updates there as well. But over the course of the last couple weeks, 187 IU student athletes made their way back to Bloomington to start their preseason workouts for fall sports. Obviously, football grabs the headlines, but you name it, the fall sports are starting their workout programs. 187 student athletes got tested for COVID-19, and all 187 of those tests came out clean. None of them are carrying the coronavirus infection currently, which is great news. And in fact, it's one of the few schools where I've seen legitimately zero COVID-19 cases for the entire athletics department. I think I've heard stories where Clemson and LSU, Texas, Kansas State had dozens of student athletes that have been afflicted with COVID-19, and they've had to be quarantined for a couple of weeks. They'd have to have their contacts traced. And all of a sudden, you know, all your excitement about getting ready for the football season, assuming it happens, kind of goes out the door. But every single one of the IU student athletes that were tested, their tests came out negative. So honestly, Matt, I know you'd agree. That's excellent news for the IU athletics department, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I mean,
yeah.
That should be bragged about, actually, that how mature and responsible our athletes are. And it's a little bit lucky. I mean, look, let's be honest. It's not like some of these guys haven't been out you know, it's summer. Like they're not going to be responsibly going outside, doing maybe some workouts with some friends and, you know, at a local high school or whatever, tossing the ball around. You can still come in contact that way. So it's a little lucky, but also they've been responsible about it. And I think the student athletes should get credit for it. Then also the coaches should get credit for it as well, because they're the ones keeping in contact with the players, making sure that, hey, you know, when you're outside, I know you like to hang out with your friends, wear a mask, please. Just do it. Be responsible. Yep. Come on. You got a season. We got to play. You got to be healthy. We got to get workouts done. When you get in here, like, love each other. Come on. And look, it has worked out. We have 187 athletes. They're going to be in a bubble at IU, and they're going to be working out, which is actually going to work out great for a team like IU, who has been together for so long now. Last year, most of the team played together. So now they kind of like not only just rekindle that friendship again, but they also like get some really serious work done, and they already have the experience with each other. Like, this team is going to be so much better come the fall because of that.
Yeah. A couple notes to wrap that part up. Coaches and staff were part of the 187 test too, just to be clear. And second thing that just popped into my head, it's that it's probably a benefit for IU to be in a college town like Bloomington compared to a school that's kind of planted in the middle of a city like a USC or a Miami. That's just something that I haven't really heard people talk about, but something that could benefit the Hoosiers as it is. Let's keep it going. We talked about college football changes to the sport in general. Let's focus in specifically on IU football. And the good news is that right now there are a lot of positive things happening for IU football. Tom Allen's regarded widely as a pretty great head coach. IU recorded 8 wins last year, one of the highest numbers they've posted in the last few decades. The Hoosiers won the bucket game last season and continued to turn on NFL draft picks. But that doesn't mean there isn't room for improvement. There isn't room for an interesting change or two. And Matt, the one thing that we always like bringing up on episodes like this is, what are your thoughts on an alternate football uniform for IU? Specifically, this is something I'm asking, a black one. Black seems like a cool color, right? Yes. Across college football. What are your thoughts on a black IU football uniform, or just an alternate one in general?
I would like to see a black uniform. I would also like to see a silver helmet, like a chrome helmet with a red IU on it. That would be dope. I don't know how they'd work it into the color scheme or whatever, but look, it's IU football. It's not IU basketball. IU basketball, it's like, we're touching the uniform. Oh no, please go ahead. Make the IU uniform fun. Like, make the IU football uniform fun. Kids like the like different uniforms. In fact, Oregon, like I've said on the podcast before, basically makes all their recruiting off the fact that they have dope uniforms and you're going to look cool. You're like, you look good, you feel good, you play well. Come on, IU football. We've done a little bit of the experimenting or whatnot with the IU football uniform before. I know IU has been changing uniforms on and off with Adidas for the last couple of years. But yeah, I would love to see a black uniform. I think that, like, an all black pants, black jersey with red accents or whatever it is. You know, if you've got a graphic design artist out there and can make me one, I'd like to see it because I think it'd be fun.
It's just you walking around the state of Florida with your alternate IU jersey that no team has ever worn. It's just one for men.
I'd wear it.
I love it. Hey, look, all I'm saying is, okay, if there are teams in college football, okay, you name it, like Oregon, like Baylor, okay, if they can go out, you know, Florida as well, if they can go out and have alternate uniforms with a bunch of different colors and schemes, look, give it a shot. I mean, look, what are you waiting for? You did talk about the helmets. I'm not sure why they sort of pulled off of the chrome helmet. I haven't seen it in a few years, but you know, get a little creative with the jerseys. Now, I agree with your point, Matt. How about a gray or silver alternate jersey? What are your thoughts on that?
Again, I'm down for it. I'm down for a gray one. I'd even be down for one that's like bedrock patterned, right? Like, ooh, it is the rock. So I'd be down for a bit of, you know, brown and red. Ooh. You know, you can do something with that and some cream maybe in there as well. So just some weird accents. But yeah, I'm down for anything. I think it'd be cool.
Yeah, I think I just saw a report the other day where Tennessee's going with a black jersey for the Black Lives Matter cause that Jeremy mm-hmm. Pruitt, their head coach, proactively put out there. So hey, you know, definitely things to think about there with the alternate uniform. Let's talk about scheduling for a second, Matt. One of the things we discussed was potentially some type of Big Ten ACC challenge or Big Ten Pac-12 challenge, which as much as I like it, seems to be kind of a long shot possibility.
Right.
IU typically schedules weak opponents in non-conference play. Mm-hmm. Are you okay with that? Or would you like to see Tom Allen, under the current system where coaches and athletic departments make the schedule, get on the phone and call up a high-profile Power 5 team to face off against the Hoosiers in September?
Well, I know I said earlier I wanted us to play some bigger people, but, you know, if the system's in place, I'm gonna go with the system. And the system is don't play people that are going to be an automatic loss or an extremely tough game. I mean, look, we're playing Wisconsin, Ohio State, Michigan this year. Those are some really tough games. Penn State. Like, we already have to play Penn State, Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State every year. I think those are four really tough games we have to play. And the fact that they're on our schedule, we don't really need any extra difficult games. Now, what I would like to see dream scenario scheduling-wise for IU is play some more local Power 5 teams. By local Power 5 teams, I mean the Kentuckys and Louisvilles. I'd like to see us play them in football. Look, Louisville's pretty good in football every other year. And Kentucky has, in recent times, been pretty okay at football. I mean, under I think it's Bob Stoops at Kentucky, he's made that program pretty decent. I feel like an IU-Kentucky game would be fun. I feel like IU-Louisville game would be fun. And then let's look around the country for other basketball schools to play in football. So something like a UCLA or a series with Duke in basketball or a series with North Carolina in football. So those playing those schools in football where it's like, well, our basketball teams play, you know, are supposed to play in the NCAA tournament. We have some history between those teams, but it's kind of fun now we have history between both schools playing football. I feel like that'd be a fun twist.
Yeah. And just so the listeners know, and you guys may not be aware of this, but starting in 2021, IU is cranking up the non-conference schedule difficulty just a little bit. Yeah. There's a home and home at Cincinnati. So, you know, you talked about the local flavor there, Matt. That's going to be a fun matchup. It's a home game against Cincinnati in 21, road game against Cincinnati in 22. And then from 23 to 25, IU is playing Louisville. And that's an agreement that came to a few years ago. Indiana and Louisville will face off in Indianapolis in 23. And then there's going to be a game at Louisville in 24 and then in Bloomington in 25. So I wouldn't necessarily call Cincinnati and Louisville the high profile blue chip, you know, five-star college football teams.
But they're good there. And they look good on a resume if you play them. Look, Ohio State went out of their way to play Cincinnati last year in football. And it was actually a pretty okay game, even though I think Ohio State ended up blowing them out in the end, but it was the first game of the season. And so it was a nice high profile game for a team like Cincinnati. And it'd be a decent matchup for a team like IU.
Exactly. And more so for me, beyond the resume part of it, I do hope that, you know, generally speaking, the non-conference schedule preps IU for the conference schedule, right? Because the Big Ten is as tough as it is. Last year, we saw IU's first Big Ten game against Ohio State go very roughly. And a lot of it had to do with Michael Penix being unavailable for that one. But the Hoosiers looked maybe a little slow, a step slow against the Buckeyes, which led to a pretty lopsided defeat. But look, if IU in future years gets to play a team like Cincinnati or Louisville that represents kind of like a middle of the pack Big Ten team, that'll help the Hoosiers once they get into conference play. Of course, this doesn't matter in fall 2020 when IU takes on Wisconsin in the very first week of the season. But so we've talked about the uniforms and we've talked about some scheduling. There are two more sort of hot button topics I want to talk to you about. First of all, this is another sort of out of left field idea I'm throwing at you here. Let me know your thoughts. It seems like it's kind of school policy to not retire numbers, right? If you think about it, basketball program, football program, across the rest of the Olympic sports, it doesn't really matter what number the best player in the history of the sport at IU wore. Doesn't matter. That number can be used in future.
Yeah.
I think it would be a good idea for IU to change that policy and start retiring numbers for football. I don't think there's an issue with NCAA rules as far as that goes. If nothing else, at a bare minimum, really make it clear that guys like Anthony Thompson and Antoine Randall were really high-profile players. I know logistically it's kind of tough to retire numbers too because you've got a roster of like 110 guys and you kind of need to use every number between 1 and 99. So I don't know if you got to start having triple-digit uniform numbers eventually or fractional uniform numbers eventually. But, you know, some way here, guys like Anthony Thompson, Antoine Randall, hopefully as we look ahead, you know, guys like Michael Penix or Wop Fillier, they can get honored appropriately, possibly with something like a retired number. What are your thoughts on that?
I think not retired number, but honorary number would be awesome. So if you don't know what the honorary number system is, it's in college sports, it's where a team will, like Notre Dame, will retire the number, I don't know, just say 10 for quarterbacks. And so if a quarterback wants to wear number 10, he has to go and ask one of the legends, hey, you know, I'm, you know who I am. I play at your alma mater at Notre Dame, a quarterback. I would be honored if I could wear your number 10. And the legend at Notre Dame would be like, yeah, sure, go ahead. That sounds awesome. That's cool. And so I'll have his name and the number 10 on the back, but, you know, he'll be honoring whoever, whatever quarterback you want to name from Notre Dame. From so I think that would be kind
Jimmy Clausen.
Right.
Brady Quinn.
Brady Quinn. I was the first name that came to my head. I was like, I don't think anybody's going to call Brady Quinn. Be like, hey, can I honor you for Notre Dame? Out of all the quarterbacks gone through Notre Dame, Brady Quinn. But no, I mean, like somebody like honoring Antoine Randall, but wearing Antoine Randall's never be cool. Or honoring Tevin Coleman, but wearing Tevin Coleman's never be pretty awesome, I think, in the future. Yeah. And having their names hung up in. Yeah. Are on in a line being like, these are our guys, like our honorary numbers, ring of honor, whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
It would be something that would be awesome.
And I think that's the bigger thing too, if you ask me, just because if you look around Memorial Stadium, inside the building, when you talk about sort of the in-game experience, it's very hard to see any sort of, you know, testament to guys like Anthony Thompson or Tevin Coleman or Antoine Randall. And I think it would be just a really nice way to connect the present Hoosiers, whatever year you're in, to some of the greats that used to play in Bloomington. Because I think off the top of the casual football fan's head, they probably wouldn't be able to come up with a lot of great IU football players, even though they've totally been part of the NFL, Pro Bowlers, Hall of Famers. You name it, and including guys like George Talaferro, who had such a historical connection to the school and to college football as well. But, you know, the one other item I wanted to mention, and we talked about this during the college basketball episode, we're going to have a mascot soon, right, Matt? I mean, come on. We've got to have a mascot. What mascot are you looking for here?
I want a bison Bevo. Give me a real bison. I don't know what the ethical means of having an actual bison in a place where there's not actual bison in Indiana. But look, it was once upon a time our logo. People bring back the bison logo all the time. I know our social media friends at Homefield Apparel have the bison hoodie that everybody talks about. It's very comfortable. I have in my closet over there. And it's a cool logo. So I want the logo back. But not as like a logo, but as like a bison. Just give me a bison. I want the bison to run out before the game like Bevo does. It'd be pretty cool. And I think it'd be pretty unique as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was a pretty popular mascot back when the bison was the Hoosier mascot. But the problem was it was a costume. Like a human would go into the costume and be a bison for 4 hours. And that could be a little taxing. I like your idea, even if PETA gets on IU's case a little bit. Yeah. Bring an actual mascot.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I have one last item I'd like to add to change IU football. Ooh, is a change of stadium. I like Memorial Stadium a lot. And I just came up with this in my head because we're talking about not having a Ring of Honor. You can't really have a Ring of Honor if there's literally no place to put a ring. Like, I like Memorial Stadium. I like what they did to the end zone. I like what they did to the other end zone. But the two main halves, the home sideline and the opposing sideline, both of those sides of the stadium are very ancient. They're ancient. They look bad. They're the seats kind of suck. Like, it's not good looks for a university. It doesn't look like a Power Five football stadium. Give me something that looks like Stanford's The Barn. Give me something that looks like, not the Rose Bowl, but give me, like, even Purdue Stadium, who, and I don't like Purdue Stadium at all, but at least Purdue Stadium looks half more modern than IU Stadium does. It's just the concrete bowl looks so meh.
I'm going to disagree with you on the Purdue thing. I was just at Ross-Ade for the Bucket game back in November. I do like Memorial Stadium more than Ross-Ade, even from like just a stylistic standpoint.
Yes.
But I see what you're saying. You're saying, hey, don't give me the Rose Bowl. Don't have to give me a Beaver Stadium or Michigan Stadium, but just give me kind of a more refined sort of upscale kind of look where – you're right. All of a sudden now you will have more space for banners and flags and for a space for honoring players. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, are you saying to like tear it down and rebuild it? I mean, is that what you're getting at here?
I mean, you invested so much money. Maybe some tweaks. I think you maybe add a second deck to one of the sidelines. You don't have to tear it down all the way, but like cut in half and then add a top, you know, I don't really know the logistics of that, but just add more seating, make it bigger, make it look nicer. And as the football team gets better, the seats will fill in themselves. Especially as Tom Allen is getting this team under its belt, but you also have to add in the fact that, you know, people don't want to come and watch a game in a crappy stadium. And Memorial Stadium, while it has its, charm,
maybe,
yeah. Has its charm, has its, you know, hometown feel to it. I've been in high school stadiums that feel exactly the same way that Memorial Stadium does. Like the same kind of concrete facade that goes straight up for a little while. Like, it's meh. Give me metal. Give me like modern technology. Like, give me modern stadium building.
Yeah, I think one of the Big Ten stadiums that aren't Michigan or Ohio State or Penn State that I do like is what Minnesota has.
Yes.
You know, their stadium's kind of, it's clean. It's, you know, it's got a great atmosphere, as you guys saw in their game against Penn State last year. You know, when it's full, it's raucous, it's crazy, but it also looks kind of nice. Maybe that's a blueprint that IU could follow. But, you know, real quick, there was some sad news in social media over the course of the last few days. And I'm not sure if those of you listening have heard, but IU soccer great Ken Snow, and we say great, and that's an understatement.
Yeah.
He passed away at the age of 50 due to an illness. And Snow is somebody who you really need to know if you're a big IU sports fan. He may not be the first name you think of off the top of your head, but Snow was the all-time leading goal scorer in IU soccer history. He set the single season record with 28 goals when he played in the late 80s. This is a four-time All-American in men's soccer. Whoops, this is Ken Snow, somebody who's a four-time All-American in men's soccer, scored 28 goals to set the single season record. For comparison purposes, IU's leading goal scorer this past season, Victor Bezerra, had just 8. And that's a pretty good season. It's just not 28. But Snow passed away. And so, you know, you can look up the articles online. But Snow was a very powerful presence in the IU men's soccer program. And, you know, he succumbed to an illness in the last few days. But in general, Matt, as we sort of sit back and take in all the changes we made to college football and the IU football program, do you have any closing thoughts as we wind down this episode number 147 of the Hoosier Sound?
Yeah, I mean, look, if you guys come up with anything that we missed, like maybe you guys, like Noah, want the pass interference rule to become a spot foul. Like, contact us on Twitter, email us, message us. Like, we'd love to hear from you guys and your thoughts on it, or your thoughts on any of our opinions at all. If you think getting rid of Memorial Stadium or cutting Memorial Stadium in half and building it from the ground up would be dumb, you're allowed to tell me that. You know, Matt, they just spent a couple millions of dollars on the end zone. Why are they going to cut it down and make a new stadium? I don't like the rules, okay? And you asked for my opinion. But, look, we're here for you guys, and just thank you so much for listening to the show.
Yeah, no, I second all those sentiments, and you know, specifically speaking, I want support for my 10-yard challenge penalty. I'm fully behind that, even if Matt's not. I don't want to hear it. You know, give me a little bit of spice as far as the challenges for penalties are concerned. But that's about wraps it up for our 147th show of the Hoosier Sound. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We really appreciate your support. Thank you to our live audience. You guys are one of the biggest reasons why we do this. To hear more fantastic podcast episodes like the one you heard tonight, be sure to follow us on the Hoosier Sound once we get some of the Twitter technical difficulties fixed. And also follow us. So you can follow us at the Hoosier Sound once we get some of these technical Twitter difficulties straightened out. You can also follow us over at Indiana HQ in order to stay in touch with all the future podcast episodes that come your way. Lastly, if you enjoy our show, leave us a review, tell a friend, share our links. Your support really helps us grow, and it allows us to reach more passionate IU fans like yourself. But as always, thank you for listening to Hoosier Nation. I'll see you next time.